Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Well, Matt, it's been about a week or two without being in studio, but we're both back in, and I'm excited to be here.
It's great to see you, Alan, and I'm really excited to be back together on Answers for the Family. Congrats, by the way, on having success finding that young lady last week. Again, we're reminded of that the difficult work that you always do, and for those of you who have been listening to our show, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much.
Well, Matt, thanks for the kind words, and for everybody out there, please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain.
While bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful.
And this show will address issues, again, like I was doing last week, locating runaway teens or family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
We will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family.
Now, with our experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us.
You know, Alan, your work often leads you to working and cracking some of these really difficult human trafficking rings and saving the children that are involved in them. And today's guest, unfortunately, also knows well too much about the dangers and the realities of this epidemic.
Well, yeah, Matt. And, you know, there's a big misconception out there that this isn't an American problem. But it really is. It is not something that just happens in third world countries and remote places. The truth is, we have a huge problem right here in America.
And thankfully, our guest today can discuss this and the incredible work that he does as a foster parent and a foster care advocate across the world.
Yes, we're honored to have on today's show Dr. John DeGarmo. He's the director of the Foster Care Institute and a leading international foster care expert and consultant who has worn many hats throughout his life, including working as a media specialist and founder of Never Too Late, a residential group home for boys in foster care.
He's also the author of several foster care books, including the new book, Faith and Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom, the training book, The Foster Parenting Manual, a practical guide to creating a loving, safe, and stable home, as well as the foster care children's book, A Different Home, a new foster children's story, child story.
Well, Dr. DeGarmo and his wife are foster parents themselves and are recently the recipients of the Good Morning America Ultimate Hero Award and the Up With People Everyday Hero Award, and the two also were honored with their city's Citizen of the Year Award. Dr. DeGarmo, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the awards. That's incredible. But before we get started, I think it might be helpful to our audience to kind of dissect the differences between foster care parents, adoption agencies, because our listeners, I want them to have kind of a good understanding of what exactly you do and then what's really out there in the world.
Sure. Great question. So my wife and I have actually been both foster and adoptive parents. We've adopted three children from the foster care system. But as foster parents, what we do is we've had over 50 children come through our home and part of our family, children who have suffered from abuse and children who have been abandoned, children who have been neglected, children who have just suffered and are in such need, and their parents are unable to care for them. So many times the court systems place them into the foster care system, and then they're placed into our homes. And we've had over 50 children come through our home. We've had children as young as 27 hours of age and as old as 18 years of age. We've had some children only stay with us for one day and some children as long as 2 years. The three children we've adopted all had their parental rights terminated, which means this: their birth parents, for whatever reason it may have been, were unable to meet the requirements that they needed for the state for the children to go back and live in their homes. So their rights as parents were terminated, and thus they went up for adoption, and we had the blessing of adopting three of those children. Sadly, we've had four adoptions that failed, that did not work out from the foster care system for a variety of reasons. But I want the listeners to know this. In our home, there are no labels. There is no biological child. There's no adopted child. There's no foster child. There's not even homeless child. We have two homeless boys with us right now. In our home, they're all the same. They're part of our family, and we love them equally.
So, I mean, I'm blown away by yours and your wife's generosity and care and the way you guys are of service and give back. I think it does take a very special person. And so I guess the question I ask is, what led to you becoming a foster parent and your wife, too?
Well, it started a long time ago. My wife's from Australia, and we lived there for a number of years. Our first child died of a condition called anencephaly, or some pronounce it anencephaly. It's a condition where the brain or the skull never truly form. And years later, when we did have three healthy children and moved back to America from Australia, I had been teaching in a very, very rural and poor part of the state of Georgia. And I kept noticing at the high school level that so many of the kids I was teaching had the same challenges of lack of attendance, challenges of behavior, and low grades. And I kept asking myself, why? Why is this? What's going on? What's the correlation? And then I met many of their birth parents, and I realized, yes, it starts in the home, So I approached my wife and said, hey, you know, we've lost our first child. How can we help other? How can we help other kids who are suffering and who are in need? And that led to what we do today.
Now, with you talk about the challenges, and with all of the challenges that are out there, what advice would you give other parents or other couples to either choose to make this decision because it's something that will be good for them, or in some cases to look at it and say maybe it's not right for you?
Oh, you know, that's a great question. On any given day in America, there are roughly 500,000 children in America in foster care. And actually, the numbers have gone up in the past year because of the opiate addiction, the opiate crisis, the opiate epidemic, if you will, that's gripping America. So many parents in jail or even dead from the opiate drugs, and their children are being placed into foster care. Unfortunately, there are not enough foster homes. For those people who are thinking about becoming foster parents, I want to stress this. It is not only the most rewarding job I've ever had, it's also the most challenging. It is a very, very difficult job. Having children who with tremendous anxieties and traumas in your home, it is challenging. But it's so rewarding. So those people who are considering doing it, for those married people, or for those couples or partners, I always stress this, that they need to sit down before anything else and discuss it. Are they both on board? Are they both on the same page? Are they both wanting to do it? Because if one person wants to do it and the other person does not want to do it, then relationships will be destroyed. There may be resentment towards a child, resentment towards the system, or even resentment towards the partner. So that's first and foremost. Now, not everybody can be a foster parent. I get it. It is hard. But I also know this, that every single person listening can help a child in foster care in some way. And that's where my book, Faith in Foster Care, comes into play. There's lots of ideas and strategies and ways for people to help children in foster care without having them in their home themselves.
Well, some of those are going to be obvious, but share some of the ones that maybe aren't so obvious to the listeners.
Sure, sure. So every time there's a child being placed into a foster home, so many times they come to my home or other foster homes with just the clothes in their back and maybe some things wrapped up in a black plastic bag. So children in foster care very quickly need clothing items, or they may need diapers or bottles or shoes or jackets. They also need a brand new suitcase, because there's nothing so humiliating as going from home to home with your belongings in a black plastic bag. School time coming around soon, and children in foster care need school supplies. Backpacks, pencils, pens, all those kind of things. Maybe somebody wants to sponsor that. Maybe somebody wants to sponsor a child in foster care during the Christmas holidays. You know, I'm asked all the time, do I get paid being a foster parent? there is a small daily per diem every day, but it does not cover everything that we need, particularly birthdays and Christmases. Those are very, very important dates for everybody. But sadly, children in foster care really had never, so many had never celebrated a birthday before or celebrated a Christmas before. So foster parents can always be helped out by somebody saying, hey, I will sponsor a child at Christmas time or their birthday. Maybe they're going to college, sponsor them during college. Maybe they need help with tutoring skills, maybe math or science or whatever it may be. Maybe there's... maybe the foster parents in the area have their own local foster parent association, and people can donate clothing or toys or even meals during those times. So those are just a few of the many, many ideas.
You know, I'm both optimistic and saddened as I hear you talk. And I think about all the time we spend worrying about, you know, other people, and yet there's people in our country who need homes, and it's... This is quite an open, eye-opening and heart-opening experience we're having right now with you. But on a personal level, you know, I think about my relationship with my wife and when we had our daughter, and we, you know, we had some pregnancy issues too, you know, prior to that. But the thing that it fascinates me is the way that bringing a child into the house, and this is probably the therapist in me, affects the marriage and it affects the relationship. Yet you and your wife have prospered through this situation. What do you think it is about yours and your wife's relationship, if you don't mind disclosing, for people out there listening, that, you know, because this is a problem for parents, not a problem, but an opportunity for parents that have regular kids in their family and foster kids, the challenges of, you know, bringing up kids. You and your wife have been so successful. Is there any kind of secrets you'd give us for that?
Lack of sleep. You know, it is hard being married. Sure, there's challenges to every marriage. And then on top of that, my wife and I have the wonderful challenge of having an international marriage because, you know, it takes 32 hours basically to go see my mother-in-law by plane in Australia, and thousands and thousands of dollars. So there's
not a
that
bad
challenge
arrangement.
Too. There's that challenge. But then when you bring kids into your home that have lots of anxieties and traumas, it adds an even greater stress level. I think the secret to my wife and our success is there's a few reasons. We both respect each other utmost. You know, we both helped out. It's a 50-50 in our home. You know, I'm sitting there. I've been changing diapers myself for 20 years straight. I'm not. You know, we both do what we have to do. We're each other's best friends. There's honesty, you know, communication, and also we have great respect for each other. And we both lead a life of service. We both met traveling in a performing group, singing and dancing around the world, and also doing lots and lots of community service. So we both came to our marriage and our relationship and our friendship through serving others. So we just see it as this is what we do. This is how we serve other people. We put these children before ourselves.
Now, you talk about how that works as far as with you and your wife. How about with the other children? Because I would think that by having them get into their own place, okay, they've now got something that they maybe haven't had, and now you're bringing in more into that situation. How does that work with them, and how do you keep that communication going in such a way that everybody can feel welcome?
Well, we've been doing it for 15 years, and our oldest child is 20, so you can quickly see that from my own children, it's their norm. You know, it's all they've known. Is it easy for them? No. Sometimes their children come in their homes who have just tremendous anger issues, or they are just have resentment issues, or they just can't open up and emotionally crippled. So it can be hard for my kids. But my wife and I really, really try to give each child in their home some type of individual attention throughout the day. You know, of course, we try to have one-on-one date time with each child, or with our own birth children, once a month, if we will. We're always about positive compliments for each child. And then, of course, we couldn't do it without our own kids. You know, we look to them for help, and they know that. But, of course, we don't give them too much they can't handle. You know, it's challenging, that's for sure.
you know, I wouldn't be doing justice to all the parents out there listening if I didn't pick your brain on parenting in general, because if anyone knows parenting, it's you and your wife. And question I have is, has your parenting strategy changed over the last 20 years, evolved, or kind of what are some bread and butter that you think has been really the guide to parenting for you guys?
Oh my gosh, flexibility. We are so flexible. And I don't know how any foster parent can be a perfectionist, because when you have child after child come into your home and each child is suffering from a unique abuse and anxiety and trauma, sometimes you just have to throw the rule book out the window and adopt. So there's lots of adopting. But, you know, we remain consistent. We remain consistent in our unconditional love for each child. We remain consistent in our positive talk to the children. You know, it's all positive affirmation. And we remain consistent with our rules and our morals and our values. You know, yes means yes and no means no in our house. And that's how it is. And we also, you know, we're also very cognizant that we are not our children's friend. We are their parents. You know, I'll be my child's best friend, hopefully, when they get older. But right now, I am their parent. So, you know, if they don't like the rules, that's I'm sorry to hear that, but that's the rules in our household. I'm here to protect you. You know, one of my books is called Keeping Foster Children Safe Online, and I write in there a lot about how, you know, so many parents let their kids have access to online technology and social media and even phones without checking that. In our home, the rule is, I don't care what your age is, if you're living in my house as a child and you have a cell phone, we're checking it every single night at 9 o'clock at night, and we're going to see who's been contacting you and who you've been contacting and what you've been looking at. And that's not because we're invading their privacy. That is because we're protecting the children from those people out there who are trying to take advantage of them and exploit them. And that's part of that consistent parenting, and that part of where we say, you know what, we're not your friend, we're your parent.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And I know on this show we've spoken many times about that subject itself, which is, you know, as a parent, you're not, your child doesn't need a 45-year-old best friend. You know, they need a parent who understands life and understands some of the dangers out there. And I know with what you're talking about now is the fact that there are predators out there. Now, as much as we would like to wish that it wasn't there, it is. It's a fact of life. And unfortunately, there are predators out there, and they are trying to contact young people. As an investigator, obviously, I have had to locate many of those where the young boy or young girl has been contacted by someone who started out pretending to be someone their own age, and then when they actually went out and met with them, realized that it was not only not somebody their age, but not somebody they want to be meeting with at all. So I completely understand your point and agree.
And the kids that come into our home, the children from foster care, those are the ones who are especially the victims. They're so very vulnerable. For so many kids, they've never had anybody love them in a positive fashion. They've never had anybody say a kind word to them. So they are going online looking for one thing, and that is for someone to say, I care, I love you. And so many times, that's what the predators just snatch them up, because they're so vulnerable.
Is there, aside from this, is there other dangers that children in foster care face that are, you know, kind of unique to the foster care of children?
Yeah, absolutely. So 500,000 in foster care system. When they every year, 125,000 will go up for adoption, and only about 50% of them are ever adopted, sadly. So many of them end up without a forever family, if you will, and they age out of the system. And that age out of the system means they leave the system. They're no longer foster child. In some states, that's 18 years of age. In other states, it's 21 years of age. And those statistics are very, very grim. Very, very grim. 55% of all children in foster care who age out of the system will drop out of school. 65% will end up homeless. And 75% of children in foster care will end up in jail. And the cycle will repeat itself. Two of the three that I've adopted are third generation foster care, which means their birth parents and their grandparents were also in foster care, and the system failed them. So for many kids, the system fails them, and they end up in the streets and in jail.
Wow. I mean, it's Shocking and scary. You know, and Alan mentioned the sex trafficking stuff earlier. I know you do a lot of research and background on that. How big really is sex trafficking in America at this point?
Oh, it's huge. I'm an hour from Atlanta, Georgia. And Atlanta, Georgia is a major hub of child sex trafficking. So many of the victims are children from the foster care system. They're running away from the foster care system. They may have aged out of the system. They may have, and they're going online looking for someone to love them or give them false promises, false hopes. You know, kids in foster care feel they have no control over any aspect of their life. When they're taken from their birth moms and birth dads and placed into a foster home without any explanation, so many times late at night, they're confused, they're scared, they're frightened, they have no control over any of that. And they feel the only control they have is with their online persona. So that's when they're going online. And that's when they're seeking out someone to accept them or to show them any type of positive compliments. And again, so that's why they fall victim of child sex predators and child sex trafficking, because they get lured thinking of false promises. And then, of course, they run away, too. They run away from the foster care system. They run away from their group homes, and they end up on the streets. And, you know, within 24 hours, they're a victim of child sex trafficking. And sadly, I'm an hour from it. You know, all these things I talk about, before I was a foster parent, I had no clue. I had no clue about them aging out of the system. I had no clue about them ending up homeless, dropping out of school. I had no idea about any of this because it wasn't on my radar, and I didn't give it much concern. And I think that's how the general public is. You know, the media doesn't focus on foster care unless there's a negative story attached to it.
Yeah, I'm sitting here shocked because I know, like, what dress Kim Kardashian wore last Wednesday in vacationing off the coast of Italy, but I have no idea about these horrific statistics and what's going on with the sex trafficking in the foster care system.
Right. And that's how it is with the general public. And that's part of my mission, is to bring awareness to it. I want people to see, you know, these children are not bad kids. They are victims. The foster parents are not weird people. You know, and that's somewhat true. We have to be a little bit weird to do what we do. It's not a normal lifestyle. It really isn't. Because, you know, it's challenging. 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year as a foster parent when you're caring for these children. But you're right, the media doesn't focus on that. We are more interested in the latest TV show, reality TV show, the latest athlete, the latest movie star, not about 500,000 kids in America who are suffering. And the mission field is right here in our own backyards, and people just don't see that.
And so what is it about our society that ignores, what do you think is the main reason our society ignores, you know, the child sex trafficking stuff?
Well, because it's too ugly. We don't want to look at it. We don't want to recognize it. We don't want to accept that it's happening in our own states, in our own country, in our own states, and so many times in our own neighborhoods. You know, I'm sure there are people listening to this program right now who have relatives who are abusing children. You know, maybe they're, or somebody at work they go to, or maybe they go to a church. They know somebody who's abusing a child, yet we turn our eyes from it because it's too ugly to look at. We want to think, oh, no, it's not really happening here. This is America, not here. But yes, it is happening right here. You know, there are over 2.5 million children that are victims of domestic abuse in America every year as well. And again, we just do not look at these things because it's too ugly to look at here in the United States of America. No, not here. You know, I'm sure you know when the biggest time of child sex trafficking in America is, right?
No, go ahead and share that with our listeners.
The biggest week every year is the week of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah, the child sex predators ascend en masse wherever the Super Bowl is held each year, and they bring these children in.
Right.
For the entertainers, for the athletes, whoever it may be.
You've got to be kidding me.
And that has turned me off watching the Super Bowl every year. As a big sports fan, that just disgusts me.
Well, and they're flown in. They're flown in from other countries. I mean,
it
is the single largest event that has the most sex trafficking in the world is that week, starting the week before the Super Bowl. I know, it's one
this
of the ugliest things.
This is the most disturbing things I've ever heard in my life.
Yes, but you know what? We don't recognize that. We don't talk about it. We do not talk about that as a nation or as a society.
Yeah, and I think to go back a little bit when you were talking about the connection between foster care and child sex trafficking, and I'm sure you can add to this, but one of the biggest problems is it comes down to exploitation and right. who is better for someone to exploit than someone that is homeless or that is not being cared for in a home. So when you have somebody and they take off from somewhere like a foster care situation, you don't have a family that's now going out and hiring somebody to go look for them.
Right.
They just go, oh, well. Well, unfortunately, the exploiters know that. And so they go in, they make certain promises, and then bring them into their stable. It's really ugly.
Right, right. Absolutely right. Yeah, and it's so hard for these kids to escape that. You know, we've had so many kids come to our own home who have been raped repeatedly by their birth parents. We had just had a four-year-old girl in our home who had been raped repeatedly by her grandfather over and over again. And when she came to us, she could not speak a single word. Yet I instantly recognized within the first moment I met her that you know what kind of abuse she had suffered, and she was in the lap of every male she met, giving them kisses, arms around their neck, and I just felt, oh my goodness, what is this going to lead to? And that happens all the time in my household.
You know, it's hard not to want to just go you know, put some war paint on and play Rambo given these stories and start doing something. But when we come back from this break, we're going to ask you just that. What can we do as a community with the sex trafficking industry? And also, what can we do to help out the foster care world? We'll be right back.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. Joining us, our guest, Dr. John DeGarmo. His new book, Faith and Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom. Dr. DeGarmo, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
So, John, this is a question that I'm asked as well, but I would love to hear your take on it. It is, what can people do to help bring an end to child sex trafficking?
Well, you know, I think the first thing is always awareness, because I believe that awareness equals advocacy. When people actually start to take off the blinders around their eyes and see what is happening around them in this nation and maybe even in their own neighborhoods, that hopefully will lead to some type of action, some type of advocacy. You need to recognize the signs of child sex trafficking and where it happens most. You know, there are so many organizations across the nation that and across in each state that advocate and fight child sex trafficking. So look to become involved with those. Bring awareness to people you are surrounded with, your workplace or your church. Maybe start an action committee, if you will, to fight it in your own area. Those are just a few ideas. But again, the first thing is awareness.
We have a listener question coming in from a fan of yours, actually. I guess you must do speaking engagements, too, because Beth in Los Angeles said, I've heard you speak and loved hearing you. I have a female teenager who, of course, wants her independence. A lot of her friends are allowed to walk around the Venice Boardwalk and on the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica. These are local, you know, kind of hangouts. I have heard that those areas are heavily trafficked by people looking for sex workers. How do I get my daughter to understand the dangers and give her the same independence at the same and give her independence at the same time?
That's such a hard age, because that's the age where Of course, every child knows everything. I have a house full of those kids right now. I've got I have five teenagers living in my house right now, and I think every teenager knows everything in the world. Sure, so that's a hard age. You know, of course, they want their own independence. So yeah, that's hard. But you know, to sit down and I don't know the particulars of this case for the child, so I don't know if it's a foster child or a birth child. If it's a foster child, it's a whole different story. But for those birth children, you know, it really starts at a young age to begin with. You've really got to start being open and honest in communication at the very, very beginning. But for somebody who's 15 years of age or this young girl right here, I would suggest introducing them to the realities of child trafficking and telling them what might happen. Kids won't want to believe it, so YouTube is a wonderful thing. Go on YouTube and show them the horrors and the realities and tell them why you are concerned. There's certain apps for your phone you can get. Locators are great, so as a parent, so I would get a locator for your phone and tell your child, okay, I'm going to trust you. You know, let's try this, let's try that, let's try this, let's try that. And if you meet this trust, if you do what we've asked you to do, then you can take the next step forward. But that's a difficult conversation to have at a teenager in today's social media world.
And then the caller, thank you. And then the caller also asked, are there certain signs that she should look for that a child or her child might be part of something like this?
Yeah, mood swings to begin with. The child may become isolated or hanging out in their own room a lot more, hanging out on the phone a lot more or the computer a lot more. Change in dress, change in appearance, change in diet. Those are just a few things. Again, you can go online and find information about this, but those are just a few signs. There are many, many signs out there.
And you had mentioned the video on YouTube to show them. Which video was that?
Oh, I don't have one in particular, but there are so many.
Yeah, but actually, they can type in just you know, teenager gets abducted or something like that.
Yeah,
there are some on there to where investigators like myself have met with parents who were concerned about that and staged it to where they had somebody contact them over the internet. You know, the person thought that they were meeting somebody that was their age and everything. They got in the van and all of a sudden they were being abducted. And then as soon as they take the thing off their head, they realized their parents were in the van also, and everybody started crying, saying, "Look, this is exactly what can happen." But it's a great message for any young person out there to look and see how easily that can happen.
That's right, you know, and they're never going to really believe it until they see it.
Mm-hmm.
In some form.
So you said you had another?
That was from Beth.
Okay. And so we have another listener question, and this one, more of a comment. It says, I was put in foster care after my parents were killed in an auto accident. I was not one of the lucky ones who were placed in a good home. I spent the majority of my youth in two homes that were in it for the financial benefits. Mm-hmm. Now married and in my 30s, I have three wonderful children that we adopted who had also been in the foster care system. It is our goal to have them grow up feeling as if they are loved and valued. We are 6 years into it and counting, and so far it's amazing. I encourage anyone listening to this program to consider this option, as there are so many wonderful young souls who, at no fault of their own, need a caring environment and loving home.
Right. And I thank that listener, and I'm sorry for their terrible experience. You know, there are hundreds of fantastic foster parents. Sadly, there are some bad foster parents, and there's one bad apple in every single barrel in life, and that one bad apple can spoil it for all the good ones, and the bad foster parents can destroy the foster care system. So I grieve when I hear those things. And as I said earlier, in our home there are no labels. They're all loved unconditionally, and every child deserves to be loved. So many of these kids are simply victims, and they never asked to have their parents abandon them on their birthday, like the 13-year-old boy in our home who was abandoned by his mom on his birthday on the highway, or the 4-year-old boy who had cigarette burns on his roof of his head, on his scalp, and the roof of his mouth, and his tongue, and his genitals by his mother. You know, these children don't ask for these things. They are victims, and they need someone to say, I will care for you. I will love you.
So, you know, As a therapist, another thing keeps these ideas keep popping through my head, and I think about these traumatic experiences that you've brought up that have happened to the children that you guys have brought into your home, and I think about this concept of nature versus nurture, in the sense of a lot of these kids you're bringing in from different homes and different environments, and you're providing right. them a stable, consistent, loving environment that you and your wife have been doing for years. And obviously, all of us are so thankful for the work you do. My question is, you would have a better kind of look into this nature-nurture concept than most scientists and most therapists out there. So what's your kind of take on what have you seen in the home by providing, you know, a very similar upbringing for all these kids to this kind of nature-nurture argument?
Well, I'll give you an example. We had one of the kids we adopted, and when she came to our house at 19 months old, she was the meanest human being I'd ever met. She was mean as a snake. She knew one word, and that the only word she knew was shut up, and she hit everything in sight. Just such a negative human being. Now she is the most obnoxious, sweet princess I've ever met. She's all about pink tiaras and foo-foo dresses and anything that's pink. And she's just such a sweet-natured child. It shows me all about environment. You know, we have seen children whose lives have changed as they heal through the power of love. Does love heal all wounds? No, as a foster parent, I can't do it all by myself. You know, many times we go to therapists, group therapists, family therapists, whatever it may be. But the power of love is a wonderful healing power, and these children just need someone to say, you know what, I'm going to love you despite. I'm going to love you despite the negative words you're hurling at me, or the fact that you are refusing to listen, or whatever it may be. And we've had kids come to our home who have so many emotional shields in front of them. In place in front of them. We had a 9-year-old boy who came to our house, and he had nothing nice to say to either my wife or I the entire time he was with us. The last day he was with us, when he went to go back and live with his grandparents after 6 months with us, he looked at my wife and said, "Mommy, I love you." The very first kind words he said, and my wife's heart just broke. And, you know, I recognized then and there that, you know what, we made a difference in this child.
So I know a lot of our listeners have been waiting patiently to hear about the new book, and Al and I are excited about it for you. Will you kind of give us a quick background on what led to writing this book and where you're at with it?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So as I travel across the nation, and actually I just came back from Greece 2 weeks ago, I hear from all the foster parents all the time, you know, why they do it. They do it because they feel called to do it. They feel that this is their mission field. So the book is for two different audiences. The book is for today's foster and adoptive parents, and it gives lots of strategies and ways to strengthen your marriage, strengthen your foster parenting, strengthen your parenting through faith-based ways. The second part of the book is for today's faith-based organizations, because again, I believe the next mission field is right here in the United States. With 500,000 kids in America, the government can't do it by itself, and the government has been failing doing it. So faith-based organizations can step up and say, you know what, we will help these children in our own cities, in our own neighborhoods. And not only when they help the children in foster care, they also help the foster parents, but perhaps more importantly, they also help those birth parents as well. Because when those birth parents see their children healing, when they visit them at visitations or doctors or court or whatever it may be, and they see their child is healing, a part of that birth parent may heal as well. And those kids may never go back to their birth parents, but those birth parents may have more children, so you've helped to break the cycle for the next set of children. You know, so many of these parents are hurting themselves. As I said earlier, two that we've adopted are third generation, which means their parents are also in pain and suffering from anxieties and trauma as well.
Now, John, you bring up a good point when you're mentioning about the birth parents. How important is it when they have one child that has been placed into foster care, that if there is a second child that is going into foster care, how important is it to try to keep those siblings together?
It's very, very important. You know, it's all about trying to keep the family together. Now, sadly, that can't always be the case. You know, sometimes they are split up. The first one I adopted, she's now 10. She came to us when she was 5 days of age, a crack baby. And she has biological siblings who live with their birth mother. my adopted daughter goes to school with her birth siblings, and it's not always comfortable. That can be many times a very, very uncomfortable situation for my daughter, because things are said. And she can see very quickly that they're living a different lifestyle. It's a different environment that they are in, and it may not be so positive. But yes, you try to keep the family members together. We had a group of five siblings in our home recently, which, let me tell you, that was pretty challenging. Yes, it's important to keep the siblings together, family together, but that's not always possible.
Now, you mentioned another point when you were talking about, you referred to her as a crack baby. Now, this was a subject that I remember many years ago. It was in the news. It was in the public eye, to where people were being told, women were being told, don't be pregnant. Don't be doing drugs while you're pregnant. Don't smoke. You know, don't drink alcohol and all of these things. Talk a little bit about, you know, you now seeing the results of that. So the first question is that, you know, how much is that still affecting them? And secondly, why are we not hearing about it anymore?
Well, you know, sadly there's the next generation, there's the meth babies as well. But for when a child comes to my home and they were born from a mother who was addicted to crack or on drugs, many times these babies, these small tiny infants, have to wean themselves off the drugs. The drugs leave their system, and it's a very, very painful experience for the babies. And they sit there and they scream and they cry and they cry and they scream for hours and hours and hours on end until they finally fall asleep. But that sleep is not a restful sleep. It's a very fretful sleep. And this can last for weeks or even months. And then there are other issues beyond that. You know, there are issues with many times learning disabilities, or issues with focusing or mood swings. You know, all three that I've adopted have some type of challenge brought to them by their drug-addicted parents. For those babies who are born addicted to meth, you know, meth is such an addictive, heinous drug. One take of meth by the user, one take, begins to rewire the brain permanently. The more the taker uses the drug, the more the brain is rewired forever. And it's become so addictive, the drug is so addictive, that the drug is more important to the user than food or water. That's why so many meth addicts don't have a job, because their single focus is on the drug itself. Well, imagine what that does to the baby in the womb. The brain is rewired forever. And now there's a new drug on the street called the Gray Death. It's just hitting the south of the United States right now. This very, very inexpensive drug kills with one take, and police authorities are finding that it is such a powerful drug that wearing protective gloves does not necessarily protect the investigators by wearing it. And who knows what it's going to do to these babies.
Are you seeing, you know, you mentioned earlier the opioid epidemic, and mm-hmm. unfortunately, yeah, I'd agree with you on our end of the treatment industry. We're seeing parents are fortunate if they can get to treatment and then get back to their family. Unfortunately, that's not the case a lot of times, as you know and I know, that a lot of these parents are dying, and the grandparents or whatever are not in a position where they can even take these children. Are you seeing, so you're seeing similar, a direct result in the death of parents due to the opioid epidemic, and then you're seeing kids, obviously, on the other side being affected by their parents' inability to be parents because of the opioid epidemic?
Yes, all the above. All the above is correct, yeah. 33,000 died from opiate drugs in some fashion last year in America, and these children are going to jail as well, and these children have to go someplace, and they're going to a foster care system that can't support it because there is not enough foster homes. Not enough foster homes for the huge number of children coming into care due to the opiate drug system. So the opiate epidemic is straining foster care incredibly. But for the children themselves, when they see their parents struggling and failing to battle this drug problem, you know, some of these children follow their parents. That's their norm. You know, so many in society think that when a child goes into foster care, when they come to my home, that they're happy, they love to be here, they want to be here, it's a happy ending after ever. But that's not the case. These children do not want to be in my home. I can provide all the security, the stability, the wonderful opportunities, the great nutrition, the unconditional love, but at the end of the day, my home is not their norm. I'm not their daddy. My wife is not their mommy. They want to go back to their mommies and daddies, however they may have abused them. So they follow the footsteps of the parents so many times. And if the parents are on drugs, so many times the children fall right back into that. That's their norm. Mm.
Another listener question and comment actually came in for you and Alan, and it reads, my dear friend's 16-year-old daughter disappeared 7 years ago, never to be heard from again. A rebellious teenager, she packed a bag, and according to three witnesses, she crawled into the back of a car with two young men. It was dark, and they did not have good descriptions of the vehicle or the men. My friend has done everything possible working with the police, hiring investigators, and joining several networking groups searching for runaways. Heartbroken, she fears human traffickers have abducted her child, her daughter. Mm. I thank you and Alan and admire all the work that you are doing to bring awareness to these dangers.
No, it's heartbreaking. And you know what? Sadly, I've had a similar story from a child in foster care who was placed with a biological family member 2 days before Christmas while we were trying to adopt her in a different state. And she ended up heavily raped, heavily abused by them, and became a victim of child sex trafficking later on. And it took me 5 years before I was able to track her down.
You know, the other side of this story is the positive good stories. And Alan told me before going on the air with you today that you have more positive good stories than anyone he's talked with and heard speak. And he says there's a few in particular that are incredible. Will you share one of those positive stories with us about someone that you've come across in your days being a foster parent?
Sure, I'll be happy to. Thanks for asking. We had a child come to us from an Eastern European country when she was 9 years of age. Her parents had been killed. I'm pretty sure she was adopted by a family for child sex trafficking reasons. She lived with them for 6 months. They sexually abused her, raped her, and then they gave her up. They rehomed her, if you will, to another adoptive family in a different state. And for 1 year, they sexually abused her, and then they rehomed her to another family in Georgia, where she was abused for 6 years. When she came to us at 17 years of age, she wanted nothing to do with unconditional love. She wanted nothing to do with family, because those things meant to her rape and abandonment. And it was a very, very, as you can imagine, it was an incredibly challenging time. I'm giving you the short version here. She is now 26 years of age. She is a college graduate, one of the 2% that graduates from college. 2% from foster care graduate from college with a 4-year degree. She's a child welfare worker. She has a baby, and we're the grandparents of the baby, and she calls us mom and dad. You know, that's a success story. It's a wonderful success story, but it took a long time, and it took consistency. We never gave up on this child. I have a few. That's one I'm most proud of.
Now, John, you had also mentioned, I know when I was hearing you speak, in regards to a young girl, that where the system itself may have failed her, you know, so that understanding that you as parents and as foster parents, you know, there's everything that you can possibly do to provide love and stuff, but that we also need to really look at our system and the way in which it's functioning. And what are the things that we can do to improve upon that so that when there are homes, loving homes out there for someone, that the system recognizes it and allows that child to stay there?
You're right. The system fails so many people. The system is all about reunification, reunifying birth parent with birth child, and that is not always a good thing. That is, sometimes it's harmful for the child. Sometimes the parents are not ready for that. And so many children go back, and 50% of those kids that go back home are returned back to the foster care system. And so many families who try to adopt these children from the foster care system are unable to do so because of that very, very reason. As I said earlier, we've had 4 failed adoptions, and some of those have ended up in some very, very tragic situations. So I think part of the reform for the foster care system is to give foster parents more rights when it comes to caring for the children, and to make adoption from the foster care system a little bit easier, and to give a little bit more accountability towards those people who have abused them or abandoned them or neglected them, those being the birth family members.
Well, we unfortunately are coming to a close, but we really, really want to thank you for coming on. We want to remind everyone that the book is called Faith and Foster Care, How We Impact God's Kingdom. Anything else, Dr. John, that we should add?
Well, I want to say what I said earlier. Not everybody can be a foster parent, but everybody can help in some way. There's a child right now where everybody's listening, where they live, that is being abused in some fashion, and everybody can help that child. So reach out to your local foster care agency. Reach out to your local child welfare agency and say, hey, how can I help these kids?
Dr. DeGarmo, we are so fortunate to have you. I hope everyone goes out and gets the book. And to our listeners out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday, June 16th. No, I'm sorry, June 23rd next Monday, when we are joined by Kent Huckenlivey, author of Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word.
And for everybody out there, continue to be good human beings and do something good for someone else. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.